Hello, this is Michael Stone, the host of Conversations. We're committed to bringing you leading-edge thinkers in the areas of environmental restoration, social justice, and spiritual fulfillment. On our program, we look for positive solutions to local and global issues that leave you touched, moved, and inspired to action. Our weekly guests include local and global experts and concerned citizens working together to heal the wounds that separate, alienate, and marginalize people. My guest today, I have two guests today, actually, two of the leading figures in shamanism on the planet. My one guest is Sandra Ingerman. She's the author of, I think, 8 books, including Soul Retrieval and A Fall to Grace, Medicine for the Earth, How to Transform Personal Environmental Toxins, How to Heal Toxic Thoughts, and Simple Tools for Personal Transformation. Sandra teaches workshops internationally on shamanic journeying, healing, and reversing environmental pollution using spiritual methods. She's trained and founded an international alliance of medicine for the earth teachers and shamanic teachers, and is recognized for bridging ancient cross-cultural healing methods into our modern culture, addressing the needs of our time. Welcome to Conversation, Sandra.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here.
Yeah.
My second guest is Hank Wesselman. He's an environmental and evolutionary biologist. Started out in way back in the 60s in the Peace Corps, where he was living with the Yoruba tribe in Nigeria, and that's when he started working with indigenous and spiritual traditions. He has a doctoral degree in anthropology from University of California, and he spent 37 years exploring all different cultures, starting in Africa's Great Rift Valley and Ethiopia in search for answers to the mysteries of human origin. Hank spent a lot of his time with tribal peoples, many of them never visited by outsiders. He's a shamanic practitioner and teacher now in his 28th year of apprenticeship. That's a long apprenticeship, Hank. And he has written many books also. I've lost count, but he has a trilogy called The Spirit Walker, Medicine Maker, and Vision Seeker. These have been translated into 13 languages and reveal the nature of his initiation into the shamanic world. So welcome also, Hank, to Conversations.
Well, thank you, Michael. Greetings, Sandy.
Hi, Hank.
Nice to get the two of you together here. You've only been writing this book for I don't know how long, which is coming out in a month.
That's right. So.
Very exciting. Awakening to the Spirit World, the Shamanic Path of Direct what?
Revelation.
Of a direct revelation, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Well, let's start with some very basics, though, because a lot of people have an idea that, shamanism is something that indigenous people do and wear headdresses and dance around and blow smoke at you. And, you know, it's not necessarily seen as a practical application. Sandy, could you begin with what is shamanism from your perspective?
Sure. Well, shamanism is the most ancient system known to humankind, and dating back at least 100,000 years. And I think that's where, you know, Hollywood gets into all the dancing around and all the ancient ways of working. And I think that the fact that shamanism is still around today shows its amazing ability to evolve so that we can use it in our modern-day culture. And so shamanism is a practice where, one, you have access to what are called helping compassionate spirits from non-ordinary reality or the dream time, who can help all of us come up with our own answers and guidance in life, especially during these changing times. But shamanism also offers to us a way to live our lives in balance of how we could honor the elements, earth, air, water, and the sun that give us life, how we can live in harmony with the river of life and start to change our lives so that we're in flow with the river of life instead of the stress of going against it, which is causing so much emotional and physical illness today. So those are two components that are important. One is getting in touch with helping spirits who can help us find our own spiritual guidance. and another is learning how to live life in a harmonious fashion, which creates healing for ourselves and the planet.
Thank you. And Hank, could you just give your perspective on that?
Sure, that's very good, Sandy.
Thank you.
You know, a shaman is usually somebody who discovers, often in childhood, that they have the ability to go into trance very easily. Now, trance is not an unconscious state. It's really an expanded state. And in this expanded state of awareness, somebody with shamanic ability is able to access an ordinarily hidden reality, which many of us have heard about, but a lot of us don't know that we experience it on an ongoing basis, especially when we're dreaming or daydreaming, okay? The indigenous person sees the world as being made up of two halves, the world of things seen and the world of things hidden, and they make no distinction between them. They understand that they present themselves together as a single common, a commonality, really. So the shaman is the one who is able to perceive in an expanded way and enter into this world of things hidden. And the first thing they discover is that that inner world is inhabited. It's inhabited by these compassionate transpersonal forces that Sandy is calling helping spirits. It's inhabited by the ancestors. It's inhabited by the higher organizing intelligences, who a lot of people have mythologized as gods or angels or guides. And through relationship with these compassionate forces, shamans are able to do various things, initially on behalf of themselves and then increasingly on behalf of others. What sorts of things? Well, you know, shamans typically are able to restore power to those who've lost their power. They're able to access information from this world of things hidden through divination, through connection with these helping spirits. The shaman is able to do healing work at various levels, the physical level, the mental, emotional level, the spiritual level. And some shamans are adept at helping the souls of the dead cross over to where they're supposed to go in the afterlife. And I just might add that this past weekend I was doing a weekend workshop in Maui, and I spent most of the workshop drumming for my participants. And during these drumming sessions, I was actually making shamanic connection with the dream aspect of Haiti, where I was able to access the transpersonal forces of the voodoo gods called the Loa, Baron, the god of the cemeteries, Erzuli, the goddess of love, Papa Legba, the gatekeeper, and so forth and so on, to help facilitate the healing for those who are dead as well as those who are still alive. And at the end, we did a healing ritual as a group for the children of Haiti. So this, you know, a long-distance healing ritual, this, you know, sort of gives an idea of what it is that we do as shamanic practitioners.
Thank you, Hank. You know, one of the things I'd like to talk about here is, of course, your new book coming out. And again, it's coming out the 1st of March, Awakening to the Spirit World, The Shamanic Path of Direct Revelation. And oftentimes, spiritual teachers and shamanic teachers have very different points of view and often, argue about whose point of view is right and wrong. But you've done a wonderful thing in this book. You've brought together five or six of some really great teachers and found a common ground. And just to tell people, Carol Proudfoot Edgar, Tom Cowan, Jose Luis Stevens, and Alberto Violdo. Tell us about how this project came together for the six of you and what you wanted to accomplish with this new work that you put together.
Well, I'll start with that. One of my passions in life, it's just a passion for me, is getting the spiritual community to work together. And a few years ago, I gave a talk at the UN, and I was saying that if the spiritual community would stop fighting with each other and stop disagreeing with each other about what's the best way to work, we could probably make positive changes on the planet pretty instantaneously. And so it's been a passion of mine ever since I got into shamanism in 1980. And the vision of the book was to bring together teachers who teach from different perspectives and say there isn't a right or wrong, there's an and. And we all have different pieces of the puzzle. And that shamanism truly is the path of direct revelation, meaning that there is no right way. It's not an organized religion. It's based on what you get from the spirits, and that everybody has a piece of the puzzle. And so it was really exciting to be able to bring together teachers who I've known for an extremely long time now and watch how all the pieces just fell. I mean, it was amazing. It was actually very easy to weave all the pieces together because all the contributions ended up falling into place into a beautiful whole. So one of the visions has been to really start to be role models for people in spiritual work, that it is time for us to come together. And it doesn't mean we need to agree on everything, but if we would support each other and really focus our spiritual energies together, we could be of great service to the planet right now.
Yes, the stakes are very high. Hank, you want to add to that anything?
Well, you know, I might add that this is in direct alignment with what the great Hawaiian kahuna Halemakua called the Ancestral Grand Plan, which he was promoting actively at the end of his life. This is a kahuna elder who my wife Jill and I fell into friendship with back in 1996, and we knew him for the last eight years of his life, during which we would spend sometimes a few hours, sometimes a few days with him. And he had this wonderful perception of the ancestors as the ones who were supporting us, kind of pushing from the past, while our descendants in the future are actually pulling us toward them. And we're sort of at the power point in the middle. So part of the Ancestral Grand Plan is exactly what Sandy said. We really must bring all of our elders together and get all the elders to bring their students together as well, so that we can find that common ground, so that we can all work together now to create change and to help transform our world into a better place to live, which will be the foundation on which the next cycle of ages will be built. And what we bring into being at this particular time is extraordinarily important because of this. So, you know, kudos to Sandy for bringing us all together. Really, you know, this is precisely in alignment with what needs to happen. And perhaps what we've created in this book is going to be an upgrade for the shamanic tradition, bringing it more into alignment with the mainstream as in terms of who we are as modern people living in a modern world.
Well, as you both know, my particular interest in putting this show together is environmental and social justice. It became very clear that we need a spiritual path to heal. And I'd like to jump in and talk a little bit about how shamanism can and is helping to heal the disturbances that are causing so much trouble on our planet with our resources and with our climate and with our population and food and all these different things. Sandy, you just wrote a whole book in addition to this one,
right,
about that very subject. Mm-hmm. Why don't you start off answering this question?
Yeah, in How to Thrive in Changing Times, which is my new book, it was really focusing on some of the ancient principles that we can all engage in to not just manifest a better life for ourselves, but again, how we can come together as a global community to create positive change right now. And part of shamanism, there's a belief in shamanism that we're dreaming the wrong dream. And part of shamanic practice has to do with teaching us how to start to align our thoughts and words to actually lead us to a desired outcome. You can't start to say the world is in a shambles and it's always going to be this way and then say that you want peace on the planet or healing in the environment. So with shamanism, we really look at what is the invisible energy behind the world that we live in, and what do we need to do to harmonize that? So how do we change our thoughts and words to be in alignment with the world that we do want to live in? How do we start to dream? Some of my students are starting to dream a new Haiti where people are living in abundance and not in poverty, and that the environment is in balance. It all starts in the invisible realms. Everything that manifests in the physical starts in the invisible realm. So we have to start to learn how to be the dreamers of the world that we want to live in. And not to oversimplify our planetary problems, but I feel that if people every single day would get up and give gratitude for their life, as shamans and shamanic cultures and indigenous cultures have been doing throughout time, and give thanks to the earth, the air, water, for all the life that we keep receiving, and the power of the sun to give us life so that we may thrive, I believe that the environment actually would start to move back into harmony, because right now we perceive ourselves as separate from life. Human beings are separate from nature. And actually, shamanism teaches us about our connection to the web of life and that there is no separation. And if we would just simply bring back gratitude, honor, and respect, I think just that one practice, doing that daily as a global community, would create huge change, as well as the prayers and the ceremonies that we can do together to start to restore harmony to the planet again.
Very powerful. Hank, could you answer that question about the relationship of shamanism to the environmental and social justice issues that are happening now?
Well, you know, this all can be summed up very quickly in three observations, which were at the core of this Kahuna's teaching, Makua. He would say it all can be summed up this way: we must love all that we see, and that requires humility. We must love all that we see with humility. The second sacred directive is we must live all that we feel with reverence. And reverence for the indigenous person means an active respect. And this permeates the indigenous mind and the indigenous worldview. You know, for them, the foundation stone for indigenous mind is respect, is reverence. Whereas the foundation stone for Western mind, which is the same thing as colonial mind, is domination, is dominion. So, love all that we see with humility, live all that we feel with reverence, and finally, we must know all that we possess with self-discipline. And that self-discipline is very important, because this is where so many of our gurus and spiritual teachers stumble, you know? They've taken a shortcut somewhere in their teaching. But, it's never too late, because you know, as you grow older, you move into your elder years, and what Sandy has really done is she's brought together a circle of elders. All of us have been teaching for almost 30 years, and she's asked us to really share our thoughts about these questions, which is why I think awakening to the spirit world is going to do very, very well. It's going to fly far beyond the edges of the shamanic community itself. And I hope it'll take form in the minds of, you know, workers on Madison Avenue and corporate board chairmen in Dallas and munitions makers perhaps in Germany. I mean, who knows? You know, it's an attitude which comes to permeate your life, so that the shamanic way of being literally becomes a way of life that, you know, affects me at every moment in my both my waking life and my dreaming life.
I think just to add to what Hank is saying is that sometimes people start to look at shamanism as a series of methods and techniques for healing, and shamanism is really a way of life. And so in looking at the environmental issues that are happening on the planet right now and the social injustice, it really is looking at us changing our ways of life to coming back more to living in a place of harmony with nature and respecting all of life on the planet. And so that's one of the beauties of the teaching, that shamanism can really bring into our time.
Well, I just agree completely. I think this is part of why Avatar has just taken over.
Yeah, right.
I mean, Avatar revealed something that the Vatican is having a problem with, that nature is God. And when you abuse nature, you abuse God. You know, this is it. This is the core teaching. And on top of that, every single religion in the world, from the simplest to the most complex, the central teaching in all of these religions is the embodiment of spirit into form. This is what the real meaning of the Christos myth is. The Christos is that spark of life, that higher oversoul self which divides itself and sends in a seed of its light, which takes up residence in a new body for a new lifetime. And this is all connected with this planet, and nature is the life force of this planet. It is this planet alive, and this is what shamanism reveals our connection with.
Yeah, well said. And yet there are methodologies, we don't want to do that,
yeah.
And there are assumptions and beliefs that are contrary to some of the accepted beliefs and assumptions that we don't necessarily think out of, but we live by and through. So I'd like to examine some of these concepts. Obviously, the first one you've already talked about is that we are not above nature. We are a part of nature and connected to nature completely. Sandy, could you, both of you have a little bit different perspectives on this, but could you talk a little bit about the three worlds and the spirit aspect of this and some of the assumptions that you see?
Well, in classic shamanism, when you look at the ethnographic literature and you look at cross-cultural shamanism, so we're not picking on one particular culture, but you're looking at Siberia and Northern Europe and South America and, you know, some, and Australia. Basically, what you see is shamans talking about three different worlds that they travel to that are outside of time and outside of space into what Carlos Castaneda termed non-ordinary reality. And in these worlds live helping compassionate spirits, spirits of nature, but also deceased ancestors, gods and goddesses, who look down on our time with a perspective that can give us a sense of what we need to do to create healing and positive change in our lives. And so in most shamanic cultures, you basically see where a shaman goes into an altered state of consciousness and with their soul takes flight into one of these worlds where they make contact with the nature spirits or what we call power animals or guardian spirits or teachers in human form who might be wise ancient ones and can get actual healing and actual guidance. In today's world, what I'm finding as I teach people around the world, there's an evolution that's happening, is that I find that my students don't travel into these different worlds as much, especially people who come to my workshops who are in their 20s. They say, I don't go anywhere. The spirits come to me. So it's been kind of exciting to watch this evolution that's happening. But from a traditional point of view, when you listen to stories from shamans around the world, they travel into these three different invisible realms where there are spirits who just kind of look down on our world from a different perspective and can help us see what needs to happen.
Hank, you want to also speak to that question?
Sure. From my perspective, as a practitioner, the collective lower worlds, the worlds below this one, are the dreaming of nature, and this is where we find the power animals and the plant spirits, the elemental life forces, and so forth and so on. Above them are what could be called the middle worlds of dream, and the middle world has two aspects, a physical aspect here and a dream aspect there. And most of us go into the middle world of dream at night when we're dreaming, when we're asleep. Humans have actually created substantial portions of the middle world because, we're creators. We're the only ones on this planet that we know of that actively create something that didn't exist before. And And so we dream what we want to create, and then it manifests into this level. That's what traditional people call magic. Above the middle worlds are the upper worlds, the collective levels of the light realms that, you know, Judeo-Christians call heaven and that Islamic people call paradise. And this is where you find the higher organizing intelligences, the angelic forces, the higher realms where the higher selves live and so and the ancestors and so forth and so on. So, you know, the shaman is the one sanctified by their initiations and furnished with their guardian spirits. The shaman is the one who is able to go into these realms and travel through this cosmic geography. And the interesting thing, as Sandy has pointed out, is that shamanic perspective from different traditions all over the world converge on these same basic truths, that the spirit world is organized as a kind of layered phenomenon with worlds above this one and worlds below this one. And they all perceive it in very much the same way. At the same time, you know, I'm discovering what Sandy is saying, that many of my students do not travel into these other worlds. So what I try to do is I try to give them a kind of grand central station place. It's something that we've called the sacred garden in Awakening to the Spirit World, a place in the dream world. It can be any number of different levels, but, you know, you can just use this place, and your spirits will come to you and meet with you there. And many of us had such a place as children, as a kind of imaginary make-believe place. This, I might add, is very much in alignment with the understanding that I found in indigenous cultures that each generation has the responsibility to perpetuate and refresh a continually recreated tradition, even adding to and changing the accumulated hoard of wisdom and technique. This is how the shamanic tradition has always remained meaningful and vital to the people who use it. And so our book, Awakening, is really our attempt to contribute to upgrading this ancient tradition and bringing it more into alignment with our modern world.
Thank you. I can't help but think that a few hundred years ago, all three of us, particularly Sandy, would have been burned at the stake for having this conversation. I mean, that's really not very long ago. There is very much a parallel between the Druid and Wicca world and the ancient shamanic world. With that parallel, Hank, as an anthropologist, did this move over into Europe? Where are the roots of shamanism?
Well, you know, no one really knows. As Sandy has said, you know, we go back hundreds of thousands of years, and we can find evidence for the awareness of spirituality. For example, in Ethiopia, there is a child's skull that was found in fragments, which is about 160,000 years
right.
old, which represents an ancient form of Homo sapiens. And that skull, when it was restored, exhibited that characteristic polishing of an object which has been carried and handled and revered for a very long period of time. And so reverence for the dead and for the spirits of the dead is obviously a very ancient tradition. But you have to understand, you know, that during the first 2.5 million years of our evolutionary history, we camped out. I mean, we didn't live inside dwellings or buildings probably until the Neolithic period. Granted, we took refuge in caves and shelters in the winter of Ice Age Europe, but all of this was manifested, I believe, as a universal worldwide spiritual tradition. And among the Druids were kind of like an ancient shamanic fellowship. And what we know about them, you know, they were avid students of nature, first and foremost, because they knew that nature is God. They also were the judiciary of the collective peoples known as the Celts. And they learned all of their knowledge by singing it, by song, which is interesting. That's how their knowledge was preserved. But they were also the shamans of their people. They were the visionaries. They were the ones who had access to these inner worlds. And because of this, they were both revered and feared. And, of course, the Romans pretty much did them in during the Roman period.
Right.
Anyway, the Druids and the Gnostics and the shamans, you know, they all spoke a common language, and they would have all been able to talk to each other and compare notes about their investigations of the great mystery of life.
And it was all a nature-based language, as you said. We were part of nature then, not separate or above it.
Absolutely.
Sandy, let's talk a little bit about power animals. I notice mine have been very active lately. I don't have to call them up for them to show up.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about the power of spirit animals.
Mm-hmm. Well, power animals, and I use guardian spirits and power animals in the kind of the same term, because a tree can also be seen as has the same power as a power animal, but obviously you wouldn't call it an animal. And I have a friend who has a great metaphor. It's a perfect metaphor for kind of showing how the spirits can work. She says, imagine yourself being at a ball game, and we as humans are the players in the field, and the spirits are sitting in the bleachers, and they're looking down, and they can see, don't run, go, don't hit, somebody's behind you. You know, they have a different perspective. And so as far as I know, from a shamanic viewpoint, these were spirits who once had life on Earth, who transcended and who agreed to be what we would call, in a Judeo-Christian religion, guardian angels, who look down on us and try and protect us. Their role is to protect us and also to offer guidance for us. And so some people actually take what's called a formal shamanic journey by using drumming or some way of getting into an altered state of consciousness and having actual conversations or asking questions and see what they see, hear, feel, smell, and taste in their journeys. Some people have more of a direct knowing, you know, like we could be talking together and one of our power animals might be saying, don't forget to say this. And because the world is in a crucial place right now, the spirits are really right behind us trying to give us just an incredible wealth of information. And so I know for myself, I'm not journeying in a formal way like I used to. I'm finding a very active relationship between myself and my power animals and helping spirits throughout the day. So it's almost like downloading, where all this information is starting to come through, but yet I don't have to do a formal journey like I have in the past. So, you know, when you say that your power animals are active, basically I'm finding that that seems to be what I'm hearing from my students around the world also. So the power animals act as our guardian angels. They won't protect us from our life's lessons, but from unnatural kinds of harm, they are behind us trying to help us out and, again, giving us guidance.
Very good. Nice metaphor. Our spirits are not buying popcorn and hot dogs right now. They're screaming for us.
They're watching the game. They're watching our back.
Real close. Hank, what about your thoughts about power animals and spirit guides?
Well, you know, I've had a relationship with my power animals since I was a little boy. I didn't know they were power animals, of course, at that time. I would go to the zoo in Central Park in New York or at the Bronx Zoo, and I would see these animals, and I would feel this incredible attraction for this one or that one. And because I lived in an apartment where we couldn't have pets, I would have these imaginary pets, and I would actively invite them to come home with me, and some of them would. And then there were those who liked to stick to the park. They didn't like to come inside buildings, you know, that sort of thing. And I was quite aware of the fact that they had their own agenda and their own personalities. In other words, they were clearly separate from myself. They were not projections of myself. I understood this as a little boy. And, you know, when I went into puberty, of course, everything changed. It always does, you know. And
I was girls, I know.
And, you know, it was in my, when was it? I think it was in my early 40s that I found myself at a weekend workshop in Berkeley. And this was in 1982. And some friends of mine had told me, you know, listen, there's this anthropologist coming to town named Michael Harner. And the name rang a bell. And I looked around my study, and sure enough, I had bought his book, Way of the Shaman, about a month before, but I hadn't read it yet. Well, this was a synchronicity. And so despite the fact that I was finishing my thesis at that point, and this was sort of a dreadful time, as it is for everyone, I went to the workshop. And Sandy probably doesn't remember this, but I wrote about it in my book, Spirit Walker. I ended up being paired with this young woman with long, dark hair named Sandra Ingerman for a power animal retrieval exercise. And Sandy brought back my primary childhood imaginary friend for me, the one that I called the Leopard Man. Now, this impressed me beyond belief because, you know, here I was, this mainstream scientist, you know, with grants from the National Science Foundation, doing international field work in Ethiopia and so forth and so on, you know, and, you know, my relationship with spirituality was virtually non-existent at that point, but it was a turning point. And from that time, I discovered that all these guys had been waiting in the wings all these years, waiting to come back in relationship the minute that I invited them. And the minute I did, my life changed dramatically. I could add to this something else. I found that as I've grown older, that my primary relationships in the spirit world are now in the upper worlds, primarily with my spirit teacher, who I perceive as my own oversoul, my own higher self, and with my oversoul's teacher, who I perceive as the guide. And these two individuals, the guide and my spirit teacher, the oversoul, are my two primary relationships right now. And very much like Sandy has described, I get these downloads constantly from them throughout the day. And my job is to pay attention and not allow myself to get too distracted by all of the wonderful things that are around me all the time. Yeah, that life has to offer, so that I won't miss it when it comes through. And they seem to be taking a very active role now. I don't know, are you discovering this as well, Sandy?
Oh, absolutely, all day long, yeah. And nature, too, as omens coming through. It's really quite extraordinary.
I like what you said, Hank, too, about paying attention and using the word synchronicity. There's something about synchronicity that has incredible power, and yet we miss it so often. Sandra, do you have some things to say about that whole area of you meeting Hank way back then and things coming together and how that happens and how as we increase our awareness, the synchronicity seems to increase?
Well, yeah, in my beginning workshops on shamanism, I tell students, because the very first question everybody asks in this culture, in a modern-day culture, everybody asks, is the spirit world in my imagination? And how I answer that question is I say, at this particular point, this is some of you, your first introduction to non-ordinary reality, I can't prove to you right at this moment that non-ordinary reality is real. But I said, what you want to watch, and you're going to see it in the first day of working together and in the second day of working together, and then as you go out into your life, the synchronicities start to happen, like meeting Hank or somebody sees an animal in their journey, and then they go outside, and the same animal is right there outside. So at some point, you have to say to yourself, I can't be making this up, or my whole life is just a hallucination, which actually it is. But the beauty of shamanism is that it keeps proving itself to us through synchronicities. You experience something, and then you go outside and you meet a person who is an exact mirror of what you saw in a journey or an experience like what Hank had in the workshop, where I actually saw in my journey an animal that had significance to him as a child. And in this way, the system of shamanism proves itself to us in a modern world because there's synchronicities that happen on a constant basis.
Yeah, that's great.
I had a nice one this weekend, I'll share.
Yeah.
I was over on Maui, and I'd been picked up by the sister of the owner of the Studio Maui, named Monica. She's Italian. I was here in November, and I did a one day, and this was going to be a weekend. And so I was going to give a talk that evening, and before the talk, we decided to have a glass of wine. During this time, Monica tells me that when she was driving her car recently, at night, this huge white bird appeared out of the darkness and flew directly at the car. And as she prepared to brake, it spread out its wings. This huge white owl appeared in the darkness. And then it just literally evaporated, just vanished. And she wasn't sure if she'd really seen a real owl or if it was imaginary or what have you. So she's looking at me and saying, do you think this could be a power animal? And so my response was, do you like owls? You know, have you seen owls a lot in your life? Do you have a feeling for owls? And as we began to talk about this, I looked at the label of the wine bottle and turned it slightly, and there was an owl on the label of the wine bottle.
That's
looking
great.
Oh, get out of here. That's so good.
That's a good one.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had a lot of those experiences, too. Hard to deny them.
Yeah.
We've got not a lot of time, about 10 minutes. I want to do two things that we definitely cover here. I'd like to talk to the area of illnesses and getting to the source or root causes of illness from a shamanic perspective. And I'd also like to save some time to tell people how this can help them in their daily issues with just dealing with the world. So can you just start out with the illness area, Sandra, and then
yeah,
Hank,
sure.
Jump in there?
Sure.
Okay.
From a shamanic point of view, when we talk about illness, we're looking at the spiritual aspect of emotional and or physical illness. And there are four common causes that are looked at from a shamanic point of view. One is where a person has lost their power, meaning they've lost their power animal or guardian spirit, causing chronic type problems, chronic misfortune, and it's the role of the shaman to retrieve that lost power animal or guardian spirit. Another is where a person has lost their soul. Soul is our essence. And from a shamanic point of view, whenever we suffer an emotional or physical trauma, there's a possibility that a piece of our soul flees our body to survive the experience. So in our culture, an accident, being in a natural disaster, surgery, war, things like that, divorce, death of a loved one could cause soul loss. And again, that creates immune deficiency symptoms, post-traumatic stress syndrome, dissociation, chronic emotional and physical problems, and it's the role of the shaman to track down where the soul has gone to and to bring it back to the body. If a person is missing some of their power or soul, that creates an emptiness in them, and the universe can't stand a void. So a spiritual intrusion, what's called misplaced energy that comes from negative thought forms, might come into a person's body, which might create more of a localized illness, a form of cancer or a neck problem or a knee problem. And then it's the role of the shaman to extract that misplaced energy, that misplaced spiritual intrusion from the body. And also souls that have not crossed over, it's the role of the shaman to heal both the living and the deceased by doing what we call psychopomp work. And so a stuck soul, what we call ghost or poltergeist, might actually come into the body of a person possessing them, where a person might have multiple personality or some kind of psychosis, where the shaman has to actually do therapy on the possessing spirit and to help it transcend into the light, into another world. So those are four of the most common causes of illness from a shamanic point of view. The ceremonies that might be performed in healing would be given by the helping spirit. So there's an unlimited amount of ceremonies, but those would be some of the more common causes of illness.
Yeah, great. Hank, you want to tackle that one?
Well, you know, I might add that one of the common causes of power loss is disharmony. And disharmony is a state that we move into, usually in response to some kind of loss experience, which is traumatic to us, like when you've lost a loved one or you've lost your job. I mean, look at how many people have lost their jobs and their livelihood in the Western world in the last year. You know, the disharmony in our society is very, very high right now. And it will be interesting, well, you know, in an intellectual way, I suppose, to see if there are spikes in certain kinds of problems like cancer in response to the disharmony, the pervasive disharmony, which is in our society right now. There is also the element of fear. Fear is not good for you because it diminishes your sense of well-being. And your sense of well-being is the same as your sense of being well. So when your sense of well-being is diminished, it diminishes the ability of your immune system to function. And when your immune system goes down, there's a definite problem. So disharmony and fear are kind of like drinking buddies. You know, disharmony creates fear, fear creates disharmony. And they contribute to the overall malaise of the individual, which results in power loss and often in soul loss as well. So this is, you know, it's a very interesting perspective on illness, on health, illness, and healing. And I've always had fantasies of, you know, being able to teach like at least a week-long transpersonal healing class to medical school students so that they have some idea of this kind of work. Because, you know, if you were to go to a primary care physician and say, you know, God, I've had this terrible soul loss experience, what do you think he or she would say? You know, they'd probably look at you strangely. Although if you have a good one, and we have a very good one at Kaiser right now, she'd look at me and say, could you tell me more about that? And this is very important because most of our Western-trained physicians are not trained in how to work on the fabric of the soul. And yet, in indigenous societies, soul loss is regarded as the most serious diagnosis and the primary cause of premature death. So knowing how to work with the fabric of the soul is something that we really need to bring into our mainstream medical world, I think. And people are working on that.
It's amazing how many doctors, medical doctors, are showing up at my workshops. It's really quite phenomenal. It's great.
Reassuring.
I was going to ask about the science community, but actually we've got about 3 minutes left, so I'd like to use it as an opportunity to close with specific things that our listeners can do to help them deal with the issues we're dealing with the environmental issues, with the economic issues, with the increase in illnesses because of many of the environmental issues. These kinds of things, they're very specific things. Sandy, will you start that off? And I want to plug your book, and I've got a blank on its name, about that particular subject.
How to Thrive in Changing Times.
Changing Times, right.
I teach people how to actually start to, number one, To start to align your thoughts and your words with the world that you want to see. Start to reframe your thoughts when something negative comes up. Replace it with we are evolving and we are working together as a global community to create change. Start to visualize, hear, smell, taste, you know, use all of your senses to start to imagine the world that you do want to live in for yourself and for all of life. And to really get that for thousands of years, people from all spiritual traditions have been teaching that everything that manifests in the physical starts on the spiritual. So don't be afraid to dream. Dream the world that you want to live in into being as if it's already been here right now. Start to use your imagination and use all of your senses as if you're actually already engaged in this world. And replace the negative thoughts and words that come up and just try and see what happens as you start to replace that and how things you do start to notice certain synchronicities. And get out in nature, connect with nature, and give thanks to the elements and give thanks for your life.
And great thanks to you, too. Wonderful. Hank, you want to tackle that one?
Boy, Sandy's really summed it up beautifully.
It's true.
You know, I would just add that this active respect, this sense of propriety as we live our lives, the foundation stone for indigenous mind. The indigenous person understands that every word that we speak, every action we take, every emotion we feel, every relationship we engage in, contributes either to the greater good of the universe or to its suffering. And so they also understand that each creature has tasks appropriate to its being. And when those tasks are performed in the right way, then the universe can function in life-enhancing ways for all of us. If any of us fail in our tasks, everyone suffers. And so, as Sandy has said, we really, as world-class dreamers, the time has come for us to dream well.
I just want to express my deep gratitude for both of you, not just for being on this show, but for the decades and decades of work that you have done to raise awareness and consciousness, bring healing into the world, bring a connection to each other, and taking on our relationship to nature. Both of you have just made a huge impact on me, and I look forward to your book coming out March 1st. I haven't gotten to read that one yet, but Awakening to the Spirit World, the Shamanic Path of Direct Revelation. Sandra Ingerman and Hank Wesselman, thank you for being on Conversations.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Hey, gratitude, Michael. Mahalo with magnitude.
Mahalo. I look forward to talking to you both soon.
Thank you.
Take care.
Hello.
Bye-bye. Conversations is an independently produced program supported by KVMR 89.5, Nevada City, and listener contributions. We are committed to bringing you leading-edge thinking in the areas of environmental restoration, social justice, and spiritual fulfillment. If you would like to receive our complimentary newsletter, The Well of Light, make a contribution, or order any of our past shows, please call 530-477-7757 or go to our website at rewelistening.net.